Puerto Rico got its third governor in less than 1 week, with Justice Secretary Wanda Vazquez sworn into office Wednesday. The change of leadership coming just hours after the U.S. territory's Supreme Court ordered short-term governor Pedro Pierluisi to leave his post, saying his oath of office less than a week ago was unconstitutional. Pierluisi's swift removal paved the way for newly appointed Governor Vazquez, who said just days ago that she had no interest in the job.
As the nation grapples with a spate of mass shootings, authorities are honing in on the ideologies fueling them. Authorities were working to determine whether the suspected gunman in this weekend's shooting that killed 9 people was influenced by a particular ideology and whether he was helped by anyone.
Morning.
And in Gilroy, California, FBI officials on Tuesday said the Bureau is opening a domestic terror investigation into the shooting at a garlic festival based on evidence found on the shooter's digital media.
FedEx will soon be doing even less work for Amazon. It said it's ending its contract for Amazon small package deliveries on the ground. This comes just 2 months after the package delivery company terminated its Air Express contract for Amazon's cargo in the U.S. Analysts say this could result in higher volumes for FedEx's archrival UPS. FedEx would keep handling Amazon's international shipments. FedEx said in a statement that it made the change to, in its words, focus on the broader e-commerce market.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's August the 8th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Here we are, another business day getting underway. Thank you for tuning in to The Opening Bell. We've put together a really good broadcast for you today. Of course, it's Thought Leader Thursday. We will welcome in Doug Myers from Associated Bank momentarily. Apple has launched its new credit card. We'll talk about how some of these big companies like Apple and Facebook and maybe even Amazon getting into the banking business or something that looks like the banking business. And we'll welcome in Doug here momentarily again a little bit later in the program. You've heard the term clickbait, the word clickbait. There's some cool new research out about whether or not news consumers are fooled by clickbait and whether or not they actually click in, whether or not they want to see something more serious. Josh Scacco will be here this morning, political journalism professor, communication professor, assistant professor at the University of Southern Florida, one of the researchers in on this. At about 5:38 this morning, you're going to be wanting to tune into this because I think we all see these headlines and we click, and there's some word about this week in the news. So the New York Times, the headline about some of the shootings in Florida and the response from the White House have been embroiled in this sort of controversy. So Josh will be here at about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour right here on 720 WGN. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings on Wall Street this morning after stocks reversed steep losses yesterday and ended the day mixed. The Dow Jones was down nearly 590 points in wild trading before the close, which was just down 22 points. The day finished at 26,007 amid investor worries over whether there were slowing economic growth signals. All three major indices staged turnarounds before the closing bell. The NASDAQ rose 29 points. The S&P 500 gained 2 points this morning. As we look at the futures market, all three are higher this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all up about 0.25% to 0.5%. NASDAQ futures are up about 0.5%. In Asia, the market day has ended in the green as well. The Nikkei in Japan up nearly a third, 76 points. In Hong Kong, up by nearly 0.5%. In Shanghai, the Chinese market's up nearly a full percent. And in Europe, in London, the FTSE up just fractionally this morning. The DAX and the CAC also up in France. Markets up by more than 1%. And oil is trading at $52.22 a barrel in the U.S., up again about $1.13. Let's check some headlines making news this morning. The company, the parent company of Sears, is announcing it's closing 25 more stores, Sears and Kmart locations by October. Transform Company issued a statement saying the 20 Sears and 5 Kmart stores faced a number of challenges trying to return them to profitability. In a weak retail environment, Sears is trying to emerge from bankruptcy by transforming itself into smaller boutique-type stores. The company said liquidation sales will begin around August 15th. It said Sears Auto Centers after the locations would close by the end of this month. It's the end of the era, an end of an era for Pizza Hut, which is closing doors on 500 dine-in stores. The company plans to shift more focus on delivery and carryout. There are just under 7,500 locations across the country, with most being dine-in. These with the lowest sales numbers will shut down first. All of the closures will happen within the next couple of years. A class action lawsuit accuses General Motors of using diesel engines in its 2011 to 2016 model year GMC and Chevy trucks that aren't compatible with diesel fuel sold in the United States. The Detroit News reports that the lawsuit was filed in federal court in Detroit yesterday, saying there are hundreds of thousands of engines affected. The lawsuit alleges the engines have high-pressure fuel injection pumps made by German supplier Bosch, which have damaged the engines by sending metal shavings into the fuel injection system. Those suing the automaker say that that's happening because diesel sold in the U.S. is not as thick as it is in Europe and doesn't have the same amount of lubrication, which allows metal to grind on metal. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell. Let's welcome in Doug Myers, who's the Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager at Associated Bank. Doug, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning to you.
Got a list of things I want to talk about today. First off, in the news, Apple has invited its first customers to apply for a credit card, an Apple credit card. Why should we all be paying attention to this?
Well, I think as a lot of companies do, they want to brand themselves. And so if you have a Apple-branded MasterCard or Visa, for example, you could use points and the accumulate points and benefits to use for Apple purchases. So if you're a Apple user who likes to have your whole infrastructure based on the Apple platform, it would make sense to use your Apple card to build up points and benefits for the Apple purchases, much like your mileage on your other credit cards for mileage credits and points.
It sort of brings all of the Apple Pay, the Venmos of the world, all of these digital ways we're paying each other. Apple now has its own ability to do that. 1.4 billion active Apple devices will be able to use this credit card.
Yes, and it's all about controlling the flow of money, too. There's fees embedded in credit card transactions, for example, and Apple and other companies want to have you use their cards to, number one, get the commissions and the benefits, and secondly, to brand themselves so you can use their products and be tied to their products. So, you know, Apple and Amazon and some of the Google and some of these high-tech companies are trying to control the flow of money and get in on the commission base and the activities that people are using to transact business.
There is MasterCard, I think, is taking part in this, and so is Goldman Sachs. Does Apple having its own payment system, its own credit card system, how does that impact a regular bank like, let's say, Associated Bank?
I don't think it impacts us. It's certainly another platform to use. People want to use, for example, Apple is trying to use their platform and their credit cards and their ways of transferring money, Apple Pay, for example, to control the funds, as I said. And that way they can control the commissions that they're receiving for the different monetary transactions that the public is using, if that makes sense.
It does. And I'm just thinking of the future. Are we going to see a future where the Apples and the Facebooks and the Amazons of the world are also the banking giants as well?
Could be. They're certainly getting into our territory a little bit, and they want to own the consumer, so to speak, and they want consumers to be tied in with them. Mm-hmm. And these companies are growing. They're getting bigger. They're becoming more powerful, and they're using the banking side of it to control more of our pocketbooks, I think.
How do you fight that?
Well, you're always going to have a need for the traditional banking services. And once again, it comes down to personal relationships. In my business, we rely on the personal relationships to to have conversations with our clients about financial planning, about investment management, and that's never going to go away, that one-on-one relationship that we use to gain customers mm-hmm. and to keep our customers.
And there's some evidence of that. Segues nicely into our next story. There was a survey done of customers of banks specifically the 20-somethings and 30-somethings who we would assume would be using the Apple Pays and the Venmos. They still like to go to the bank, and they're still showing up at bank branches to do their business.
Well, that's true, and we've talked about this before. And, you know, 10 years ago, people expected branches to go away, and the opposite has happened. In fact, there's been more branches. But I think the way that people approach walk into a branch is different now. Banks are trying different ways to approach the customers in a branch. People don't want the teller lines, for example. They have roving bankers and tellers to handle transactions for people. And I also read an article that younger people feel more comfortable sitting down in an office one-to-one with a banker and discuss financial planning or discuss investments or even a mortgage process. And I think especially the younger people are changing the way branches operate. You've seen some of the banking cafes mm-hmm. that banks are trying to do, and it just changes the way the traditional branch works. And I don't think there's really a decline in the number of branches, but they look differently than they used to be.
Yeah, you mentioned the bank cafes. I think it's interesting because I want to say it's Capital One. I've seen the commercials on TV where the guy's walking through the lobby of the bank, and it looks like almost like a Starbucks or a WeWork place. I mean, it just doesn't look like a bank lobby at all. You can get coffee and sit and have conversations.
And I think that's what they want. I think it's less intimidating. I think they have roving bankers with iPads that tell them they can open accounts with them. Mm-hmm. They can be guided on investments and mortgages and things like that people go into a traditional bank branch for. And I think it's a less intimidating, more inviting way to do business. And especially the young people are getting used to that, and they're demanding that the branches act differently than they have before.
If folks haven't seen this study or seen this research or heard of it, the J.D. Power Retail Banking Study, 3/4 of Gen Y, about 73% have visited a branch to open an account. 60% of younger adults say that they visited a branch within the last 3 months.
I think people are going into branches less, and once again, I think that's why branches are changing. I think the younger set especially is using a branch for certain things, but also doing more digitally on their phones and on their computers than probably the older set is.
Yeah, you mentioned the ability to see somebody face-to-face. Even though I'm not in any of these demographics anymore, there's something to be said about going in and seeing the person dealing with these things in person, on paper, rather than online.
There is, and I think research shows that people want to go into a branch to, let's say, make a deposit, for example, because it feels safer, it feels more secure. And I think as people get older, they realize that they appreciate the one-on-one, face-to-face.
So what do we see then in the coming years? More of these cafes, these bank cafes, or more technology in bank branches? What's going to be happening at Associated?
Certainly more technology. I think there's continuing to be consolidation of banks, just given the cycle of business. And I think at one time we had over 8,000 branches in this country, 8,000 banks, and that has consolidated over the years and whittled that down to, I think there's between 4,000 and 5,000 banks in this country, as opposed to, let's say, Germany that has 4 banks. Mm. Or Europe or England that has a couple banks. So I think you're going to see consolidation, but I think you're going to continue to see banks using more technology, smarter technology to figure out what people want, what kind of products people want to use from their bank. So I think there's going to be a lot of artificial intelligence being put into the technology that banks are using.
The other good story that I've seen this week is, and we've been having conversations here and there about blockchain and cryptocurrency, lots more intersections between some of the normal, I don't want to say normal, but some of the standard banking practices we've seen, and now wealth management. We've seen more use of blockchain, at least being talked about. First, remind us all what blockchain is, how is it different from cryptocurrency, and why this might be a good thing for wealth management?
Well, I think cryptocurrency is certainly a subset of blockchain technology. And blockchain technology is like a digital medical record, for example. It's very transparent. As people go into to use a product within a blockchain technology, it's very transparent, it's very efficient, and I think there's a lot of applications that people are now looking at to use this blockchain technology. Financial transactions is certainly one of them. Cryptocurrencies is certainly one of those byproducts of the blockchain technology.
Walk us through a little bit of this. So in the standard world, if you're exchanging an asset, there'd be a stack of paperwork involved. This is sort of a digital paper trail that can or cannot be changed?
Well, blockchain is a distributed database existing on multiple computers at the same time. So, for example, you could have a contract that could be negotiated through blockchain technology without having all the paper that you had mentioned. I think that if you look at what's going on now, for example, in wealth management with the transfer of wealth as people sell their businesses, for example, and want to distribute assets and cash to the next generation, blockchain could be used to transfer all the assets or fractional shares of those assets in terms of a token digitally. And it's done instantaneous, and it's done very transparent and done efficiently.
I think if people have ever been through a closing for a house, for instance, you know how you have to go to sit with the big giant stack of things, and you have to make sure all of the different paperwork is signed. This could be done pretty quickly online.
It could. And to use your example, if, let's say, a house, for that example, was distributed to two or three heirs, you could use fractional ownership in the form of tokens to transfer that asset to the heirs very efficiently and very quickly and instantaneously. So that's kind of the whole idea behind blockchain technology.
What are the challenges in terms of getting this off the ground? Are there going to be legal challenges to some of this? Are there security challenges?
I think all of the above. I think it's emerging technology, and with any emerging technology, you're going to have interesting things that happen as a result of that. And I think legally, and especially when you start dealing in contracts using this type of technology, it's going to open up, I would think, a whole new side of the law.
Is there any doubt in your mind that that's where we're headed in the future?
No, I think all of these technologies are going to continue to develop. They're going to continue to merge. You know, you talked about Apple. It's a technology company, and I think they want to see themselves, like I said, owning part of the cash transaction or owning part of the flow of funds in any cash transaction. I think we're going to continue to see developing technology in all areas of the financial industry.
The blockchain technology, one singular one that I know you've been doing a lot of educating yourself about, I've been doing the same. That's probably good advice for people listening. If you don't understand this, you better learn it pretty quickly.
Well, that's right. You don't want to go into anything you don't understand. And especially in the financial industry, you want to make sure it's as simple as it can be for you to understand and embrace it.
Doug, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
They can call me at Associated Bank at 312-544-4600.
It's always good chatting with you.
Thank you, Steve.
Doug Myers, Senior Vice President and Private Banking Regional Manager at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. We do it for you every Thursday here on The Opening Bell, but you can hear our past conversations at WGNRadio.com, and also head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to hear more conversations and meet our thought leaders there, and follow Associated Bank on Twitter at Associated Biz.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Our focus now turns to the business of journalism, headlines, and how they are written in the digital news space. influence the way we all seek out information and which stories we read. There's some interesting new research on this out this morning, and we're happy to have with us one of the lead researchers on it. Josh Scacco is with us, professor of political communication at the University of Southern Florida. Josh, good morning. Welcome back to WGN.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
So we've all heard this term clickbait, and your research sort of focuses on the type of headlines that are written to get us to click into the stories. What have you found?
So basically that newsrooms that are operating on clickbait, particularly for the political stories, actually could face backfire effects. And so what we did in the study was we ran a few different ways of trying to understand different types of clickbait that people might see on a news story. So those forward reference headlines that drop you off a cliff, such as "you'll never believe what happens next," or question headlines that pose a question to their audiences. What we found was particularly question headlines can actually lead to detrimental effects on whether or not people click on a news story, whether or not they intend to share it with their friends and family. And so this is potentially troubling for newsrooms, because one of the things that many news outlets have been relying on is different forms of news writing in the digital age. And so we have evidence here to suggest that, in fact, some of the efforts that newsrooms are engaging in might not actually be as successful as they were hoping for.
Yeah, and I'm interested because one of the examples of these headlines that you've posted that's in this research, so I'll read all three of them. How a rail stoppage is weeks away unless Congress acts soon. Another version of that is a rail stoppage weeks away unless Congress acts soon. Rail stoppage is weeks away unless Congress acts soon. So you're saying the research says that people are going to move away from that question headline into one of these others?
Yeah, so those are actually three examples that we used in the study. And really just some minor tweaks to the headline can actually have some really important effects to whether or not an individual intends to engage, to click on, to comment, to share, or even to pay for a news story. And so this potentially has important implications for the revenue model of news, particularly with newsrooms trying to figure out how to get audiences to pay attention to news, which is always a struggle to begin with. So once they're paying attention, how do you keep them coming back for news? And so this is the first step in a series of studies that I'm doing with my colleague Ashley Munneman at the University of Kansas. This is a great collaboration between the University of South Florida and the University of Kansas, sponsored by the Center for Media Engagement. And really what we're trying to understand in this research is in what ways it is the modern forms of news that journalists are focusing on, and what ways might that be actually beneficial for newsrooms from both a financial perspective, but also from a democratic perspective, in terms of getting individuals knowledgeable about the news and those types of things. And in what ways might some of these strategies not lead to the benefits that newsrooms are hoping for?
There are a lot of implications here. For the newsrooms, are spending a lot of money and resources getting people to come to their websites. They spend, in some cases, a lot of resources on the people writing these headlines. Talk to us a little bit about the money involved here, the resources and revenue that potentially is being lost out on for journalism because of these headlines.
So this actually is really important. If we think about this, there were two studies in this particular research that we just had published in the journal New Media and Society, which is one of the top journals in communication. The second study looks specifically at the online user behavior on 9 local news websites. And so this was anonymized aggregate data that we looked at, and what we found was that if you put one of these curiosity gap headlines, either a forward reference headline or a question headline on a news article, it can lead to potentially a drop of something like 1,300 page views compared to a local news story with a summary traditional news headline on it. And why that's important is page views, particularly in addition to other online metrics, are used by advertisers. They're used as important metrics for whether or not for the types of revenue that newsrooms are able to generate from putting ads on their websites. And it's important to understand for audiences out there that news in the United States, compared to many other countries, is a private endeavor. And much like other organizations and corporations out there, the news at the end of the day still has to make money. And so in addition to educating us about what's going on around us in the world, they have to find a way to keep the lights on. And so this is one of the things that is really concerning for many news outlets, particularly local news outlets, which might be trying to rely on and find some space in the digital ecosystem to attract audiences.
Yeah, and the stakes are really high, Josh, as you know. I'll remind our listeners that if we don't make money, and we've seen this a lot recently, newsrooms go away. We lose staff. We don't get to cover as many things as we'd like. So the implications are pretty big here.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the things that we didn't necessarily cover in the study, but we can look to, for example, consolidation of newsrooms. Recently, you can see the mergers of big kind of media corporations across the United States, particularly ones that deliver local news. You can look at this in terms of the closures of news magazines and those types of things as well. And really, this is something that we don't necessarily think about a lot, but is also so critical in terms of not only where the news is delivered, but how it might be delivered. And so one of the things that we are continually focused on in this research with the Center for Media Engagement is how do we create a vibrant media system that is not only really important and beneficial for newsrooms and for the people that they employ, for the journalists that they employ, but also how do we create connective democracy? How do we make sure that the news in a lot of ways is doing and fulfilling the democratic obligations that it has to inform us, to hold leaders accountable? Those types of things are also critically important. And if a headline, as we found, is potentially repelling people immediately from the news before they even engage with the news story, that not only is the newsroom losing out, but the person could be losing out on learning something about their local community as well.
So the marching orders going forward, if people are paying attention to this, would be to have a little bit more focus on the headlines. I know a lot of cases it's one of the last things people do in some cases. There's not a lot of attention paid to it, or it's sort of a throwaway thing. This needs to be front and center.
I think that's one really important point, that over and over again, what we find in the academic research is that headlines are really the first big shortcut that individuals use to form judgments about a news story. And many news outlets do have their own editors for headlines and for writing headlines and for doing the writing of them. But really one of the recommendations that we come away with here is that actually in even a digital news environment, that the traditional way of writing headlines might actually be the best. And so being able to summarize a news story fairly quickly, it might actually be very important for individuals.
There's also the other part of this. Sometimes I don't think we give our news audiences credit for being pretty smart and sophisticated people who get it when we're trying to lure them to a story. So it seems comforting to know that the study sort of suggests that we have smart audiences.
Absolutely. And one of the other things that we come away with here in this particular study is that individuals have formed habits about how they go about looking for the news. They formed habits about how they search for information. And one of the potentially most disruptive things about clickbait is that it actually can disrupt these mechanisms, these well-honed information-seeking mechanisms that people use, including the expectations that they form of the information that will come after a headline. And when sand is thrown in those gears, it potentially can have a really important effect on what we're looking at currently in some new research is trust in the newsroom. What can, for example, the tone of a headline and the type of information covered in a headline in a news story have for trust in a newsroom? Something we didn't necessarily cover in this study, but we think could be important going forward. If people are getting burned by this type of news writing, are they then potentially having negative reactions to how they view the news outlet as well?
Boy, and that could be really huge if news organizations are having problems maintaining their integrity and keeping viewers and listeners loyal, and it's a headline, that has huge implications as well.
Absolutely. We live in an environment right now where news is facing multiple challenges, both financially as well as politically. And what we see ourselves doing in this research is being able to help and guide newsrooms as they navigate this environment, financially, politically, to deliver the best product that they can for their news outlets, for their news organizations, as well as upholding really the journalistic mission to democracy in terms of delivering information that people need and that the newsroom can be proud of at the end of the day.
Social media is one of those areas where we see some of these headlines first. I know Twitter links us to some of these stories. The New York Times found itself in this situation, I think, this week when they were writing a headline about Trump visiting Florida and the response of the White House. Even just a couple of different words, if it's not clickbait, can impact whether listeners and viewers and readers click in on a story and maintain that level of communication with a news organization.
Absolutely. The one thing we find, whether it's in headlines research or whether it's in other political communication research, is oftentimes the change of one or two words can be a very meaningful difference for things like not only whether or not someone will click on a news story, as we found in our study, but whether or not someone will find a story credible, whether or not someone will support or oppose a particular policy just based on reading a news story. And so Steve, you bring up a great example about the New York Times finding itself in a fairly awkward position about the ways in which that it worded a story. The other thing that I think viewers need to understand is that what, for example, outlets like the New York Times and many others do is they test headlines in real time. So you might go to a news website and see a fairly similar story to what might appear in, for example, the paper version of the newspaper, but the headline online might be written differently in order to attract a different audience or in order to encourage individuals to click online, because the ways in which we encounter information through the newspaper versus online will necessitate a change to how that information is presented. So one of the big implications that we see here is obviously that extra effort that is needed to rewrite a headline in multiple different formats might not sometimes pay off for the newsroom. And that, I think, is one very important takeaway for newsrooms.
Well, Josh, this is good research. We appreciate you sharing it with us this morning. I know you have a lot more questions, and we look forward to follow-up research activity on this. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, as always.
Josh Scacco, professor of political communications at the University of Southern Florida, with us this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street a little bit later on. Dow futures are up 48 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P futures up nearly a third. NASDAQ futures are up nearly a half a percent. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Let me begin by saying thank you to all of the folks who joined us yesterday at noon at the Boone County Fair in Belvedere. That fair continues through Sunday, and it's one of the long-time county fairs in northern Illinois. They always put on a great show. Yesterday, the House Agriculture Committee Chairman, Colin Peterson, hosted Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue during a bipartisan listening session with members of the House Agriculture Committee and other members of Congress at the Farm Fest in Redwood Falls, Minnesota. And the secretary did say, because some farmers said, we've lost markets that we'll never get back, But the secretary said, no, we will get them back. China is going to buy from where they see the best value. And he added the U.S. government working to develop alternate markets, including India, Thailand, Indonesia, and Malaysia as well. And the word from China is that they could have lost 2 million hogs in the African swine fever outbreak as that fever continues to spread in China and around the globe. And the Illinois State Fair getting underway today, along with the Iowa State Fair, both beginning their runs that will continue through Sunday. And as we said, the Boone County Fair, a short drive from Chicago, will be on through Sunday. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. Let's get you up to date now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, August the 8th. The weekly report on first-time claims for unemployment benefits leads off the reports. Economics analysts see jobless rates, initial jobless claims coming in at about 206,000, which would be 9,000 fewer than last week. Wholesale inventories for June are also set for release. Analysts are expecting a 0.2% gain over May. We'll also see the EIA natural gas report, a report on the Fed balance sheet and money supply also coming. On the earnings calendar today, Viacom, AMC Entertainment, CBS, Activision Blizzard, Uber, Yelp, GoGo Inc., and the Kraft Heinz Company, among companies reporting quarterly financial earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on Thursday, August the 8th.